Mike missing.
So we have Lynn, Tom Malloy.
Brad. Brad's not here.
Tom. And then Bill Underwood.
And Joe's not here.
And Joe's not here. Brad's not here. Yeah, Brad had foot surgery, so he won't be here.
Oh. Okay, you want to say the Pledge of Allegiance? I'll start it. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. No public comments from nobody? Okay, discussion opening item, just the minutes, which I haven't looked at, but I'll check them over later. Anybody have any time to look at anything? Minutes? Anybody move approval?
I move they approve this percentage.
You weren't there, were you? Huh?
There's copies right there, yeah.
Yeah, I move that they're approved as presented, if you look for a motion.
Okay.
Seconding.
Nobody's here.
I wonder if we even have a quorum. We have, what, two members?
If you question it, we have to count. If you don't say anything, you
know. I was...
Don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah. It's definitely, that's Robert's Rules of Order. Don't ask, don't tell.
Okay.
So they're approved. Investment portfolio is why we have our guest present today.
Well, we can...
We
want to do the internal investments, yeah, or do you want to just go ahead since
these... Yeah, let's skip over to PARS.
Why don't we have you guys, because you guys came here long distance, and so forth.
About 15 minutes.
But you came anyway. I appreciate your schedule.
No, it was still, you had to get up and put on a suit.
Oh, Dennis is going to join us via Zoom.
Keith,
I'm sorry. I was looking at,
And would you, could you introduce yourselves? Thomas
sure.
New.
Okay, so I'm Dennis Yu. I'm Executive Vice President with PARS. This year is actually going to be my 30th year with PARS.
Oh, wow.
Hard to believe. But so I started working with the city about 6 years ago to set up this trust program. And then we also have Angela Tang, who is a senior client services coordinator at PARS. And so she's kind of the city's day-to-day contact on any PARS-related matter. So.
Okay.
How's PARS doing?
We're doing well. We actually just hit $7 billion in assets under administration. So that's a big milestone in our company's history. So.
And PARS is an outside investment company that was authorized by the state to be using this kind of company. I don't know how long ago.
So we started work about 40 years ago, but maybe 8 years ago, we got approval from the IRS to offer this type of trust program specifically for cities to be able to pre-fund their pension and OPEB, also known as retiree healthcare liabilities as well. So.
And we didn't feel like CalPERS was performing well enough for us.
Good morning. Can you guys hear me?
Hi, Keith.
Hi.
Good morning, Keith.
I can't hear you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Are we on mute?
No, we're off now. Okay.
Morning, Keith.
Okay. Well, okay, you may...
Can you hear us, Steve? Okay. You said you couldn't hear us.
Keith, can you hear us?
Yep, I can hear you now. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you.
He's very muffled.
Great.
Okay. So I'll go ahead and get started on this presentation. On page 3, so when you think of PARS, there's actually 3 companies in total that administer this program. So the company that Angela and I represent, we are PARS, the consultant that helped set up and administer this trust program on behalf of the city. We also have a trustee, so that trustee is U.S. Bank. They are the company that actually holds the assets of the program. So anytime the city sends money, you don't send it to PARS, you send it to the PARS trustee. And then the company on the far right-hand side is Highmark Capital Management, the investment manager for the PARS Trust. And so that's the company that Keith represents. And Keith has actually been investing the assets over the past 5 years. So as long as this trust has been in place, Keith has been the investment manager. Okay. On page 4, for the benefit of the new community, or newer community member, this trust is set up as what's called a 115 trust. So basically, it's an essential governmental function that the city uses to pre-fund its, currently its pension liabilities, and you, in the future, you have the ability to pre-fund your retiree healthcare liabilities also within our trust program. So as I mentioned earlier, we have a private letter ruling from the IRS that deems that, yes, this is a tax-exempt trust program. There's a special carve-out provision in the California Government Code that allows us to invest in equities, as long as it's done in a prudent and diversified fashion. Obviously, your city assets, general fund, cannot invest in equities, but because it's inside a trust fund, your city does have that benefit. And in the future, you will eventually one day take money out of the PARS trust to pay off certain liabilities, so you can either reimburse yourself for ongoing CalPERS expenses or to pay off any CalPERS liabilities that may exist. So there is a lot of flexibility with the city with respect to the funds that you can disperse from the trust program.
Tom, one of the, in the law, when you read that section code that they refer to there, it lets the cities invest in equities if we have a professional investment management.
Right, it must be done in what's called a prudent and diversified manner. So that's in the California Government Code. So that's Keith's job to make sure it's managed.
I was going to say, you've got that person.
Yes, it's not me or Angela or the city. Yeah. You've delegated that responsibility to Keith's company at Heimer. Yes. Page 5 is just a visual representation of what we call our combo trust. So this is a trust program that can fund one of two different liabilities. Thus far, the city has only chosen to pre-fund its pension liabilities on the right side, but in the future, you have the ability to pre-fund your retirement.
You know, as we added money, we have $156,000 in liability for OPEB.
Correct.
So this year, maybe it's $150,000, but anyway, we tackled it in an approach of $50,000. So we're planning on budgetarily reducing our contribution. We talked about this before. So instead of $100,000 going directly to pension, we'll put $50,000 toward pension and $50,000 toward OPEB. So we will be, that's one of the questions that's going to come up later, is tracking that separately, et cetera.
Okay. Right.
Because our contribution for 23-24 will be split.
Right. And that will be PARS's job to track it separately. And on the statements, you'll see it tracked separately there.
Okay.
One last thing is, while you do have investment strategies selected for the pension account, the OPEB side can actually use you can use the same strategy or a different strategy. So that's something that you may want to look at or consider once funds do go into the trust program.
Okay, good, thanks.
So I'm gonna review a bit of information about the pension trust fund for the committee. So we have more than 150 cities in California that have actually set up this trust fund to pre-fund their CalPERS or 37 Act retirement system liabilities. And first and foremost, the main reason why most cities do that is to retain local control over the retirement plan assets. So as opposed to sending the money straight to the retirement system like CalPERS, the city retains it locally, and you have, you can control the investments, you can control the timing of the disbursements and so forth. And that's, many cities prefer to have that. And ultimately, you have a tool or a vehicle that can help you stabilize your pension rates and also act as a rainy day fund. So in difficult, turbulent fiscal times, you have the ability to draw from this fund to help pay your ongoing CalPERS liabilities. On page 8, I always like to show you what your current funding status, because the whole purpose of funding this trust fund is to tackle the CalPERS liability that the city has. Within the last month or so, CalPERS has released its 2022 valuation results. Mm-hmm. So we have your updated CalPERS liability figures that we can share with you. So you can see as of 2021, you had about a $1 million mm-hmm. unfunded liability with CalPERS. So you were 80% funded. So what does 80% funded mean? For every dollar of liabilities the city has, you have 80 cents in assets to offset that liability. So unfortunately, CalPERS did suffer an investment loss during the 21-22 fiscal year, so they were negative 7.5%. And as a result, that dropped your funded ratio from 80% down to 69%. So you're slightly a tad under 70% at this moment. If you're thinking, well, how are we doing compared to other Orange County cities? I want to say that you're probably around that. That's about average among the Orange County cities. Those cities with safety employees, those tend to be probably in the lower 60% range. And then others may be higher, as high as like 80%. So the most common range is between 60 to 80%.
So is that 69% does not reflect the application of the 115 trust, correct?
Correct, yes. Oh, so CalPERS does not recognize any of our assets because they only recognize assets inside their trust program. Mm-hmm. And so your unfunded liability is $1.7 million. So now, going from 2021 to 2022, there's an increase of about $700,000 in unfunded liability just from 1 year of poor investment results.
But we have about $700,000 in this 115 trust.
About what we have in there.
Mm-hmm. So we have, that's in our 115 trust. So yes, from that perspective, we're still close to 80%.
Yeah, if you do the math, then that would be additive. And depending on how you want to present your financial statements, I've seen some cities take on their financial statements mention that they do have assets in a 115 trust, and then that the funding ratio could be adjusted as a result. So it's depending on how you want to present
it. So, I mean, when you see the 69%, like Lynn did, your jaw drops, and you're like, oh, but I want to make sure you understand that's the point of having the 115 and setting money aside in anticipation.
I didn't quite catch that. Let's just count.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So just a kind of a small spoiler alert for what we can expect in 2023. So CalPERS, they did release their 2022-23 results. So they were at 5.8%. So unfortunately, again, second year in a row, they fell 1% short of hitting the required discount rate. So as a result, I would expect the funding ratio to stay about even. So when you see your 2023 results come out about a year from now, there probably won't be too much change from this number. Okay.
So I think when we started this process 6 years ago, you had predicted that, and Stanford and various folks had predicted that they would fall short.
Correct.
And then they changed management or funding management along the way.
Right.
And then they had the one I sat in about 2 years ago, they had great
rosy predictions.
Yeah, rosy predictions. And so you're saying those didn't come about.
Those have not yet materialized yet. They've taken, over the last couple of years, they've taken a more aggressive approach, meaning a lot more private equity investments. They're introducing some leverage into the investments as well to kind of boost the equity exposure in the trust and so forth. So yeah, they are trying to hit that 6.8% discount rate, but then what we will expect in the future is the investments will become more volatile in nature as a result. So hence, that's the reason why having this trust program to help stabilize it and invest in a more, actually in a slightly more conservative fashion may make sense for cities.
So our goal in the investment strategy, I think, was 75 to 80% funded was what we were shooting for.
Yeah,
each day. So we had that flexibility.
We're over about right around 80%.
And so we're near the top of that.
Policy. We put it in a number in there.
I think we're targeting 80 to 85, somewhere in that range, like Bill said. Somewhere in that range. We're right within our targeted range at this point.
Okay.
Obviously, we can't take a whole lot more hits from CalPERS, but...
Right.
We want to look at that again and see if we can...
Now, one last thing I did want to point out on this page is a projection of future contribution rates that the city can expect. So we have contribution rates currently, which is about $167,000. That's how much the city is paying on the employer standpoint each year. But by the end of this decade, we're going to be looking at an increase of almost 50%, where you're going to be contributing about $258,000 per year. So that's the current projection. And you might be wondering, well, why is it? It might be a little bit higher than you've expected or you've seen in the past. But by you being at 69% funded, according to CalPERS, that puts upward pressure on your rates, because ultimately CalPERS wants to try to get you to that 100% funded level. And so that can't happen unless you put in additional contributions over and above kind of the what's called the normal cost, the amounts that the employees are currently accruing at. So that's the reason why you're seeing that increase, that 50% increase towards the end of the
year. So just to comparative purposes, Lake Forest was 100% funded. With the losses in CalPERS, where do they stand now? They're not at 100 anymore.
No, then they would also drop back down to about 90% or something like that. Yeah, so we're seeing unilaterally about almost a 10% drop or
which
so
is kind of an interesting when you paid off and you think, oh, they had a big celebration in Lake Forest and now they're not.
Now
they're not paid off.
Exactly.
So when I was on the grand jury, you never really wanted, because there are negatives to being 100% funded. If you look at the actuarial formulas and the 55 assumptions beneath it, it's a soft number. So you never really wanted the negative, maybe account person never get this because they're always falling short, but if you can become overfunded and you can't pull those funds back out.
Correct, yeah. So it's always, it's probably, there's no advantage to be overfunded, you know, at 100% or even more so funded. And also the thing about like a city like Lake Forest being 100% funded, the investment losses are much greater, have a greater impact because that creates a greater loss on the books and the assets and so forth. So the more assets you have in the CalPERS trust system, and if they don't hit that rate of return requirement, then that actually will be to the detriment of the city.
So we keep our funding of PARS up to the right level as and adjust to that. We'll continue to have that cushion to be able to.
Yeah, that's why the creation of the 115 trust. Right. So you have that ability to self-control.
To offset and to smooth out the rates. And Lake Forest was one of the earlier adopter of the 115 trust as well. Mm-hmm. So they do have that reserve, hand as well. So with that, I'll turn it over to Angela, and she can give you some of the historical information about this trust program.
Thank you, guys. So on page 9, this does give us a summary of the city's plan, which started back in November of 2017. The plan administrator is the city manager, and then the current investment strategy chosen is the moderate high mark plus strategy, which Keith will go into a little bit more details later on. The second half of this page does give us information on the account as of the end of September. But just a quick reminder, the first contribution that we received was back in June of 2018 in the amount of $100,000. Since then, the city has continually made contributions. So to date, we have received a total of $600,000. No money has been taken out of the account thus far, and we've been able to see a net investment earning of a little under $35,000. Giving us the total account balance as of the close of the third quarter of about $628,000 in the pension account. Page 10 is a graphical representation, and you can see those consistent contributions that the city has been making over the years, and then the movement of the assets as well. Again, at the very bottom right there, you'll see the total account balance as of September 30th, and it's right under about $639,000 there. Okay. So that was a quick overview of the pension account. We did also include information on the OPEB trust, which we talked about briefly. So I'll go ahead and turn it back to Dennis to touch on that.
And as we mentioned, so the city has that about $160,000 unfunded liability, which you're now going to start to address. There is one page I did want to point your attention to, which is page 14. So the city, when you established this trust, you actually did select the investment strategy for the OPEB trust program. And so you did, as a place, what I would call a placeholder, 6 years ago or so, selected the same investment strategy, the moderate investment strategy for the retiree healthcare trust. So if you make no changes, when the money is deposited, it will immediately be invested in the same strategy. So I just want to make sure that you're aware of the selection, and if you want to change it, that's also a possibility. And there is some rule of a thought process of why you could actually be maybe a little bit more aggressive with this type of investment, because technically these are longer term liabilities, so that you could potentially withstand a little bit more volatility within the investments and yield a higher rate of return. But if you're fine with this moderate strategy, then we can just leave it as is.
So do we have the latest results in this, in the back of this book?
Yes, and that's what we're about to turn over to Keith, and he can go over the
results. So one of the things you got to keep in mind with OPEB, we have like $150,000 in liability.
Yeah.
It's not very big. I mean, we have a $2 million reserve, unallocated reserve. Mm-hmm. So, we have sufficient, if we ever wanted to just...
You can write a check.
We can write a check to them. So that's why we've never really...
We're self-insured.
We're pretty much self-insured with that perspective. However, just for purposes of our CAFR and our annual reports, we felt we should be making a strategy toward contributing toward it. The council agreed. We talked about this before.
Right.
I think our strategy is going to be, over 3 years, it'll be basically a zero-sum game. But we can certainly change that. I don't see any real reason to change the investment strategy. We're not targeting and we're chasing anything here. It's just a matter of cleaning the record, as far as I see it, almost pretty much you know, well, but it's up to you guys. We talked about this early on, so it's up to what the advisory.
Well, we talked about it at the last meeting, and because we don't have a lot of people here, I'd rather just skip it this meeting.
Okay. And operationally, we have a pattern where it's not a new decision to put $100,000 in funding, so it becomes.
Yeah, it's not a new. We're operationally the board, the council has made a contribution every year, and we try to make it as painless as possible by not. Adding 50,000 here or there, but anyway, made seamless, if you will. So that's kind of where we're at. But I think we'll be making that contribution this year. Lee will be arranging that over the next 9 months.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, and with that, we'll go ahead and turn over to Keith, and he can explain what the moderate strategy is and how it's performed going back to the 2018 time frame. Okay, all right, Keith.
Hi guys.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm gonna put my video on. There we go.
Oh my goodness, there we are.
Good morning, Hi. Keith.
All right. I have no idea what it looks like there, but nice to see everybody. Sorry I couldn't be in.
That's right. We
are. I kind of overscheduled myself and didn't really think about the commuting time to get down. I have to go down to Carlsbad, so. Would have rather just driven over to Villa Park. It's much closer to my house. So as Dennis mentioned, you're in the moderate active strategy. The strategic asset allocation is a 50-50 mix of stocks and bonds. You can see we're just marginally underweight stocks at 49.25%. The portfolio is, up 4% compounded since inception. That's not bad given that fixed income, which is half the portfolio, has made almost no money at all because the rapid rate hikes over the past 12 months. This year, up 9%. Just some asset allocation decisions. We, as I mentioned, we've been modestly underweight equities. We've been there since about April of 22. So the first half of that, it worked well. The second half, not as well. We are favoring the value sell over the growth. That's been that way for a few years. And realistically, probably a wash also. It was a big benefit to the portfolio last year, and this year, not so much. We are neutral duration, but we were short duration when interest rates were lower. All these are kind of like a point in time, so you don't really to know where it is over time. It's more, just trying to give you a feel for where it was over time. So when rates were very low, we were short duration. We went to neutral duration as rates rose. I have to admit they've risen more than expected at this point. We added to mortgages and eliminated high yield, and that's also just to prepare for in case there's a recession. The mortgage rates have skyrocketed, and so we thought there was some value there, and high yield spreads are very tight. So it should the economy weaken, those are probably widen out. In terms of the economy, so we have competing forces, very aggressive fiscal policy, federal government spending money like crazy. In COVID, it was giving money away to people and extended unemployment benefits. And then as we moved into out of COVID and into the recovery, it was, an infrastructure bill, which is badly needed. We also passed the Inflation Reduction Act, which doesn't actually reduce inflation. In fact, it might stoke inflation, but it's very good marketing. And then recently the CHIPS Act, which really hasn't even hit the economy yet, but that will also be stimulative to the economy. On the other side of that, we had a very easy Fed for probably too long, and they forced rates down, quantitative easing, mortgage rates got to ridiculously low levels, the whole world refinanced. And then they stoked inflation, and so we've been on a path for the past maybe 14 months to raise rates to offset the inflation. has worked at the margin because inflation was as high as 8% and is now down to around 3. The Fed's target is 2. And, you know, the Fed's target does not include anything like getting prices back to where they were. It's just have them stop going up as fast as they are. The last, squeezing that last 1% out of inflation has proved to be a little bit difficult, and maybe in fact, because, you know, it's rents and housing and, you know, the job market being particularly strong, and all those things are really keeping rates high and keeping inflation, you know, sticky at this last 1%. So that may be harder to do than the first 5%. Yield curve is inverted, which implies a recession is coming. We don't know really to the extent of whether that will be severe or just a blip. At the moment, you know, the employment picture implies that it's going to be just a blip. And as I mentioned, credit spreads are tight, so, you know, that also implies that if there were a recession, it probably wouldn't be much to worry about. On the other, probably the one area that has felt some stress from the rate hikes was the regional banking system. You know, regional banks, when they lend long and borrow short, they get caught on that. And, you know, so if you have a bunch of mortgages that you've loaned and you hedge them with a 5-year bond and rates go up 500 basis points, the hedge doesn't really work very well. So we had three banks go under, all for different reasons, but basically sort of the same problem of rates. You know, had the Fed started raising rates a year earlier, maybe the inflation wouldn't have been as bad, and, you know, maybe the banks would have had more time to adjust to the reality and not been caught quite so badly. So this, and, you know, this usually happens when there is stress in the economy and loan losses are rising. So we haven't had any credit event yet, and still had some stress in the bank, in the regional banking system. So should we get to a more severe recession and loan losses are rising, we could see some more problems there as well. And then, of course, I probably should add to this, we don't have a Speaker of the House because Republicans are at war with each other. And we also now have two different wars that we're at the fringe involved in. So hopefully the world will settle down and, you know, things will just get a little quieter. But at the moment, that doesn't seem to be happening. Any questions before I move forward?
No, good.
No, just underscore, I heard Biden talking this morning, and the amount of aggressive fiscal policy is going to continue. It sounds like he's got a big package he's asking for humanitarian war support of Israel.
Yeah, so that's not really going to affect our economy so much. That just affects our finances. So, you know, the things that affect the economy are government spending on programs that boost economic growth in the country. So, you know, certainly the infrastructure bill, where we're going to be, you know, fixing airports. I don't know if you've ever been to LAX, but I've lived here for 30 years and it still looks the same. They seemingly are spending money on it all the time. But, you know, the roads and bridges and, you know, all of that, that kind of stuff really boosts the economy. Sending aid to foreign countries and supporting them militarily, you know, there's, you know, at the margin, I guess we have to make more bombs and military equipment, but for the most part, you know, that's just trying to make the world a safer place, both for others and for ourselves, quite frankly. Because the last thing you want to see is Vladimir Putin decide that Poland is next, or one of the NATO countries is next, and you know, that guy doesn't seem to have much to live for, so why not try and reconstitute the old Soviet Union and go down in history. And of course, Israel has always been our ally, and that's a complicated place, the Middle East.
Referencing LAX. Referencing LAX, I mean, I just want to share with you some things. Like you, I'm a native. I was born in Los Angeles, raised in Inglewood.
so I'm very close to LAX.
Yes.
That stretches, LAX stretches all the way to Englewood now.
Yeah.
With that monorail thing that's going in and the big parking structure. I mean, when you drive through the horseshoe, I agree with what you're saying. It looks pretty much, but there's been work all over out to the west. You know, it's unbelievable the work that's gone on. There are billions of dollars over the last 10 years. And it looks like it's not going to stop in a sense. But, I mean, there's so many other things you don't see as just a pedestrian that's going on there. You know, I mean, it's a mile from the international flights just to customs through if anybody's done this, you know, through all the tunnels. All that stuff is underneath the airport. You know, that's been going on. So, I mean, it's quite a deal.
Referring to the visually.
Yeah, no, I appreciate what you're saying. But, I mean, there's work, unbelievable the amount of work that goes on out there. It'll enhance, you know, the L.A. area, the Southern California area, because of that. It's going to be easier to move around, if you believe that. I mean, it's hard to believe right now, but... But anyway, I just wanted to share with you. It's a lot.
Yeah, you know, one thing always got me is that monorail, or whatever you want to call it, the light train coming in, doesn't actually get all the way to LAX. It gets close.
Well,
it doesn't go into the terminals. I never got that.
And I agree with you because the same thing went on in San Francisco. You know, they stopped at San Mateo, you know.
Right.
Because I was in school when that was going on up there. And so anyway, I never understood that. But the bus companies... And the taxi companies, you know, they made sure they got their 2 cents in, because if that happened, like you and I are talking about, they would have been out of business. You know, so you have all this politics that going on that you and I don't have a clue about. You know, but anyway, we'll be here the rest of the day.
Anyway.
It doesn't know what exactly brand new. So, if you flip the page page 17, that has the investment returns on it, and the only thing I might highlight in here, half the money is in fixed income, and as you can see, over time, only up 50 basis points, and that's basically because the Fed's raised rates so much recently, but even over the last 3 years, you know, you can see we were down 3.9%. The index was down 5.2%. And then the recovery, we did better. And that's what I was talking about. We were short duration when rates were low. And then after rates rose, we kind of neutralized duration. So that actually worked out additive to the portfolio. And then the rest is kind of where you might expect it to be. I would say that you're in the active strategy, and in this period anyway, the active funds, active equity funds and bond funds have outperformed the benchmarks, which is nice too. And then the next page just has the funds and ETFs that you own, and in the weights that you own them. One thing I'd really highlight is we did get rid of one of our large cap growth managers. They hadn't performed well, and we just replaced it with the S&P 500 growth ETF until we find a substitute active fund. And we kind of did the same thing with the small cap growth manager. We had used the Vanguard ETF fund while we found a different small cap growth fund, and then we finally replaced it. So it just takes a little while to kind of let that process play out. We want to be careful with what we're doing. So that's all I have. And the last page has just got historical numbers on it.
Well, I think you want to look at later. Huh? Thank you, Keith. Anybody have any last questions? Okay, let's go on to the next section. Thank you again.
All right. I'm probably going to step out because I got to get on the road.
Thanks, Keith.
Have fun.
Okay, thank you, Keith.
Right. Yep.
Thanks for your work, Keith.
Hopefully, I can make it there next time.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
And then at the very last page on page 20, this is kind of what Dennis was talking about. On an annual basis, we do work with a third-party auditor. Currently, we are working with Clifton Larson Allen. So at the end of the fiscal year, they do provide us with that audited financial statement, and we are actually currently working on that and finalizing with CLA. That should be coming out in the next month or so. But whenever that is finalized, our accounting team will have that sent out to the city so you have it for your record. Along with that, we also have the supporting SOC 1 Type 2 reporting that speaks to the controls and the calculations that is utilized for the trust as well. But throughout the year, if there's any questions at all, certainly let us know. Whenever the city is getting ready to make those contributions, certainly let us know as well. We'll be happy to help coordinate that. All right, and then as we did a note, at the very back, we do always like to include the quarterly performance sheets for each of the different portfolios that are available. The most up-to-date information we have currently is through quarter two. We should be getting the third quarter information shortly, and we can certainly share that with the city once that's available.
So we have the moderately...
The moderate.
Mm-hmm. So right in the middle there. Moderately conservative.
Well, no, is it the moderate?
Is that the moderate? Yes.
No, it's the next page. Oh, next page over. Mm-hmm. There's a moderate. That's right. Onto the right, yeah.
So if you wanted to compare CalPERS performance to this strategy during the exact same time period, where it was 5.8% with CalPERS, it was 7.6% with the moderate strategy. So there was outperformance.
CalPERS was
5.8% for the 22-23 fiscal year, and then the moderate strategy was at 7.6%.
Okay.
The results for CalPERS, where do you find those?
Actually, the CalPERS, if you go on the CalPERS website, there's press releases, and so you can find it there.
It's in the buried in the press releases.
Yeah, we should always have these numbers for the council. Yeah.
Every July, about 3 weeks into July, that's when CalPERS releases their numbers. They do true it up again at the probably November time period. Usually it might fluctuate 0.5% or so, but it makes big news. At least in our world, it makes big news,
right,
and so forth. So you can be kind of looking out for it usually about the third week of every July.
And that happens only annually, right?
Yeah, they only release it once per year.
I was trying to put that in some treasury reports for council in terms of comparative.
Yeah.
So we had that. So.
Yes.
Well, maybe, okay, I mean, these two numbers trends are good to give the council, right?
What's
what he just gave us is simple, you know, and doesn't confuse them.
Right, but one of the reasons we went with PARS was that it would outperform CalPERS, and right, so that's why we went, and local control, but those combined, so it's good to compare.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He just gave us a good number to compare. Right. And I'm sure we can call him for more. Okay. Yes. Yeah, so
and that's all we have.
Exactly.
More questions.
Thanks for coming. Are we your smallest client?
No.
Okay.
Oh, thank you.
After the, like dozens or whatever, you have more assets than some of our smaller clients. No, you are not responsible.
They're easier to get to at the very least.
Thank you for your attention.
We do appreciate the effort it takes to do
Thanks
that.
For forgetting about Thanks.
Thank you. I had some spares if you want to share the other
Just measures. Leave them. Just leave
them. Okay, yeah, for those that don't make it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I think the purpose is the city council, they want to know performance high level.
Keep it a simple number.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So you give them too much
more,
and you would lose.
Yeah. If they ask for more, we have it.
That's what they view you guys as doing, is looking at the grassroots type of thing.
That brings up a question on my part. This is a very prominent name, Investment Advisory Committee. Do we have insurance? Us, Arizona Mission, us, and do we need
like director's insurance?
Well, we're fairly well protected.
We're only advising, though.
Okay, but I just wanted to...
Yeah, no, this group does not have any decision-making authority.
Okay.
So while you can provide advice to the council, the council is the ultimate. The council ultimately can look at you and say, thank you very much, we'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
So it's an advisory, and that's why the name and everything was very, we were careful.
So we've transitioned over time on the advisory word, that you don't have to fill out a section.
Form 700.
Form 700.
Good.
Because you're advisory. Good. We were advisory.
Okay. You have no direct authority over funds.
I'm sure.
It's you're the kitchen cabinet, if you will.
Territory has been cultivated. I just thought of bringing it up.
No, it's a very good question, and I appreciate you asking, because everybody's got it. Yeah.
Okay, so let's go to our investment portfolio issues.
Okay. All right. Thank you for coming in.
You should have one of these. Does everyone have one?
Yeah.
Right there?
Do you have all this packet? Okay. So what I have in this packet here is to share with you, present to you, is the Treasury report for July, August, and September, as well as our cash flow worksheets here. Month of July, there's nothing unusual, pretty routine. But however, if you want to review it concurrently with the cash flows back page here, so for the month of August, you will see a net decrease of just about $1 million. The main reason, this is provided and calculated on a cash basis. So whatever that hit the bank and then we cut the checks. So for the month of August, there's a huge decrease. The mainly is because we have a $500,000 for the progress payment for the street projects, as well as
the street projects.
The street projects. Yeah, which is highlighted here on the yellow line item here. But that would be the projection line item here. So, and then also in the month of August, that actually the OC share, they cash a total of like a 3 monthly payments, which is the June, July, and August. And our monthly contract payment is roughly about $150,000 per month. And we usually get the June invoice at the later time, because like they usually chew it up and based on the actual cost incurred. So okay, so that's August and September and just routine. And however, for October, I do want to give you a heads up. For October, we have you will see a huge a significant decrease, about 1.2 million. One of the main reason is that we have a 900, we're estimated the $980,000 payment for the annual street project.
What is it? What is it? The payment?
900.
But who?
It's an annual street project.
It's an annual street project.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's about a $2 million.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no problem.
We have $2 million total project cost. So it is incrementally paid out based on milestones and projected.
Going well, too, hasn't it?
We are completed with all but the final punch list items.
How about the sewer project? Is that...
Sewer project we've withheld because we're doing evaluation right now of all of our capacities.
And that's not spending
we actually have
money.
A consultant that's working on that, and that's built. We have a, as you recall, we have a sewer assessment fund that pays for that, and that's not out of the general fund.
And that's, okay.
That's not our general fund. We, on your tax bill, you see an assessment, and that was approved 207, somewhere in that range. Anyway, per parcel. And we, at this point, because of our ADU issues and all the, you know, we decided that it was best that we look and see what our capacities are, not just the status of how our system is, but, you know, okay, our system may be in really good shape, but what is the capacity? So if you're building additional ADUs, et cetera, we...
Granny flats and all.
Yes, that type of thing, yes. We want to make sure that our system doesn't, you know, if it's like 95% and you're going to build something on top of it, we have to make sure there's accommodations in there. So that's what we're doing right now, and the consultant's working us, and also doing it on putting it onto a GIS system so that we can pull it up anywhere in the city. So we're in the consultant... I don't know what is it, acronym, global information system type of thing, where we have access to it online. We can pull up any system, part of our system, and find out where we are in status, et cetera, and any work that's done. So typically,
even the assessment right now is out of the sewer fund.
Yes, it is. And even the consultant is out of it. But in lieu of starting any major projects, we wanted to find out where, not just the status, but where we have potential structural needs.
Yeah.
So that's what we're focused on.
Is there any one place, just off the top of your mind, that you've had a concentration?
No, you know, well, we have concentration. Obviously, ADUs are in the larger lots is what's happening. But we have anywhere from, last time I checked a couple years ago, we had like 55 ADUs in granny flats in the city. We have a lot more now. And with the state legislation, that's sort of what we're relying on to help us with our housing element. And even further legislation, they're just throwing it at us every year.
Yeah.
Now you can sell them independently of the parcel of the home ownership. They relieved the home ownership responsibility, et cetera. We have certain things that our ordinances can't keep up, and we updated our ordinance in 2020. And they're not current yet, so we have to go back and redo them.
So right now, you can already sell an ADU.
Well, the legislation says that, but there's question mark whether the language says the city has to opt into that ability or not. And if so, I don't know that the inclination would be to recommend you opt into that, because it creates all sorts of problems.
The land.
Well, yeah, the land parcel splits, utility hookups, just innumerable things. So it is a solution, in my mind, a solution that was looking for a problem. There wasn't a problem. People were building granny flats or whatever to accommodate whatever. But now if you're looking for profit, you're trying to monetize or incentivize building ADUs. Well, then basically you're just splitting properties, et cetera. So the average lot size in Villa Park is half an acre. And you can obviously get pretty much an ADU in almost every one of those. So it's sort of like problematic for us, and we're trying to figure out the implications. And like I say, there were at least 10 pieces of legislation that came down on that this year that were approved by the governor just the other week. So catching up is a challenge. So
clearly hadn't been well thought through in terms of legislation.
No, they're designed to, quote unquote, increase housing stock.
Right.
All right. Increasing housing stock doesn't mean, I mean, that's one motive,
right,
if you will, and I understand that. But at the same time, there's all these other implications about operationally. How does that work? And how does that affect community? How does that affect zoning? You know, lot splits. The assessor, we've talked to them, they're very frustrated because if you sell a piece of an ADU, do they sell the property if it's not been a lot split? Or do you force lot splits? Or what do you do? So parcel splits, basically. It's a challenge because now they're trying to, do they assess building-only costs? You know, for purposes. But here's the deal. If you build $1 million ADU, the way this is, and you sell it for market rate, which is going to be more than $1 million because you're going to make a profit on it, right? You're going to get hit with property taxes. So people haven't realized the unintended consequences of that. So somebody who buys it, it's not like affordable homes in Villa Park. You're just building another stock of affordable homes. You're building another stock of moderate to expensive homes in beautiful neighborhoods. And you're changing the complexion. So there's a lot of issues going on here. But anyway, that sewer is sort of the only way we can,
that would reflect,
we can control
in the cash,
it. Yeah.
But it doesn't affect that at all.
It doesn't affect our general fund.
I mean, if you tied the sewer in a granny flat into your sewer on site.
We don't allow that now.
Okay, I was just sitting here thinking it through. So you have another hookup fee.
Yes.
Yeah, and so that would have to be a separate parcel. I mean,
well, that's what we think, but we're trying to figure that out.
I'm just sitting here thinking along with
See what I'm saying operationally. How do you do that? Then you not only sewer, but you have utilities and water, power, and
another water service.
Right. And then you got separate water meters. Do you have meters
in the 3-piece suits? You know, bring this crap up, and then you got to deal with it. You know?
Well, yeah. Now you're trying to figure out. Okay.
Oh my God.
You know, and then what happens where you have properties which were built in 2015 that didn't have separate hookups?
Yeah, or had a septic tank.
Which we still have a couple hundred of those throughout the city. So it is operationally something where it's a challenge.
Yeah,
but you know we'll work our way through it. But it isn't affecting. And one of the wise things that Villa Park did is we set those funds aside separately.
Mm-hmm.
Those are allocated every year. We don't spend them to sewer funds. We have them collecting funds,
right,
and they can't get spent for any general purpose or anything else. They're locked in.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Investment strategies, like I said, I prefer not to talk about that because our two really good financial guys are gone.
Yeah, so speaking of investment strategy, well, on the investment per se, so I just want to bring it to your attention too that this coming at the end of the month of October, we have a CD that is maturing, and the par value of that CD is $110,000. So, and I have get some.
What's it pay?
I beg your pardon.
What interest rate?
Oh, for the renewal for the upcoming ones. Yes, I did some pre-shop. I did get some estimates or options from our Wells Fargo advisor, as well as also the Union Bank. So we have those two advisors, and both of them are very comparable, and they're both about 4.9%. But as of last Friday, so of course the rate will change or slightly change a little bit, hopefully, by end of this month. So as they get closer, I will get updates. Mm-hmm.
It still seems like we should be able to get more money out of it. Since the CDs are giving us, it's just anyway. We'll see. Proceed.
Well, I mean, you find them. You find them every now and then. The Wall Street Journal or something like that. You'll find, some that pay pretty good. But I mean, is that something we want to do? I mean, I may personally want to do it.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to go to a high risk bank.
Yeah, I'm going to sign with Bill here, who always said one of the primary the goals here is safety and liquidity. Yeah. Mm-hmm, chasing, right. The
safety
yield was not
you.
Yield was not one of our top. Bill is Bill says it better than I do.
It's in both our investment advisory strategies. It's also in the California state law for municipalities. The goals are in this order: safety, a principal, number one objective above everything else. Right. Number two is liquidity to meet operating requirements, which is why we ladder so we have constant liquidity being formed. And then third, after meeting the two objectives above, is yield. So we really don't chase yield. We go over time, we play that strategy, and fellows who chased the yield for the treasury of the county spent some time in jail trying to chase yield when the yields went the wrong way. So that's a lot, and that's our strategy, and it meets the goals of Phillip Park City as a conservative investing city. So,
but when you look at the list of certificates of deposit, it's pretty scary.
What's that?
When you look at the list of what we own and what we're getting on, it seems like there must be another vehicle that is similarly accessible, which we don't access these things. We don't really use them, the CD money.
Right.
We just keep rolling it over. It seems like it's very inefficient to me, and
I'm putting together a Treasury operating guidelines. I got a draft now, but it needs to be a little work. But the primary reason for this, and we didn't do this 8 years ago, we didn't ladder insured investments so that we had constant money being, so that liquidity goal is matched, done by matching, so that we have those coming due all the time. There could be another instrument to do that. So while we're
looking
at that,
I'm thinking.
I was just going to say, could we have somebody on staff or yourself look into that other vehicle and just present it to us?
Well, we've got to find what that other vehicle is.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is a good job for Joe and Mike to do because they do this all the time. They have clients, and what do you think about that, Lee?
Well, I do want to remind everyone, we do have a CD investment policy. So even though whatever vehicles that we all have in mind, we want to also sure that we are in compliance to our government code sections as well. Investment policy.
We can change it. I mean, it's just we have what now, 6 CDs right now at this moment.
Yeah.
And it's just awkward, always having to make this decision of, go shopping for a CD every time one matures. We don't use this money, so...
Fortunately, we don't use that money.
Yeah, I mean...
Mm-hmm. So the only thing I would caution is...
We need access to it.
It is effectively our reserve. This is where our reserves are invested.
But we don't even have
The only thing I would say... They're callable, right?
No, currently these are none of them are callable.
Well,
so they're
safely. But one of our concerns is if anything is, we got to be careful because You remember back in 2017, we were here when I first got here, we had the collapse of storm drain up on Mesa and Henderson. Yeah. That cost us $1.9 million. We thought FEMA would come through. FEMA gave us $300,000. The rest came from our general fund. So we ended up paying $1.6 million. So we have $2 million in our reserve right now. That can go quickly. And I just want to caution that you got to be careful about that.
Maybe even more accessible than these things.
I don't disagree. I just want to make sure that we don't long-term lock up and can't get to
them. We didn't even liquidate one of these for that.
So as you go to faster liquidity, faster accessibility, you'll go with lower rate.
Well, then we can go to slower liquidity. We don't need the liquidity on this account.
Well, we did.
It's just a hassle, isn't it?
Then what we did, too, is at that time we depleted all of our other reserves.
Right.
When that happened, so we didn't touch, because these weren't available, right? But we went after, so we wiped out our infrastructure reserves, we wiped out our cash at that time. You remember Bill dropped a huge amount because that's what we had to do, just to fix the problem. So it is, I agree with you, if there's other, we can look at it.
We'll look at other options. I think it's not straightforward to go look at that option. We need to first see what option would fill our goals.
That's all we're saying.
When we got here, when we first rejuvenated this committee, we didn't do ladder.
We had no options.
We didn't get so all of the late and OICPA, and we said, well, we don't have staff to do it because the secretary for the clerk used to do it. So it took us about a year. We put in ladder so that we at least had 200,000, and at that time we were at 500,000, 1,000, 100,000 a year come available every 6 months. Now we can't handle 1.9 out of those. Although we can always call them and liquidate them, but we have generally 200,000 coming available each year, on top of LAIF and OICPA. So anyway, we'll look at it. Okay. It's a multi.
You know what? Let me meet with Mike and or Joe, and talk about if there are other assets available, and then for the next meeting. We'll decide if we want to discuss this.
That's a good idea.
Well, I think it falls in with her point.
Oh, yeah.
You've got to renew the strategy, so it's a good time to put that in at that point. Right now, as treasurer, we're operating the operating guidelines under the strategy, meeting those goals, and starting with the state goals. So as long as we meet the goals, whatever works.
Yeah. Okay.
But neglect of it does not work. And by the way, the faster you get accessibility, the lower rate you will get. So that comes back to our matching. So if we can match our short-term and medium-term and long-term needs and availability, we'll get a little higher yield. In this case, crazy market, where the yield curve got inverted, we had a period of low interest rates.
Right.
So if you play it over time and say we're not chasing rates, we're just trying the ladder to take the goals at a time, that's where we are. But opened everything.
These people are very malleable with reference to rate. I mean,
right
now. You could go back to them. I don't know how much. I mean, I don't let the mechanics.
Go back to them, maybe.
I mean, the rates are raising. I mean, for cash. Sweeps and all
are
that stuff.
Are you saying we should go back maybe to one of these banks that maybe is like half a percent interest?
You tell them you're going to pull that money. You can't believe what they'll do.
Well, that's interesting.
So, no, I mean.
Well, we did that with our checking account.
Yeah.
Right, that worked.
But, I mean, these are ridiculous rates compared to what's going on right now in the market.
That's what I'm saying. We get stuck with them because we don't have time to keep constantly.
Right.
Anyway, we'll explore this next meeting.
Strategy-wise, let's look at that. Operationally, we'll continue. With that, there was an action item from last meeting about FMM Bank and the fact that we had $2 million in it and looked a little high. After the meeting, Steve told me, hey, by the way, this is very valuable. We can't tell you how valuable this cash flow statement is that we never had before. And a lot of work on Lee's part to get this done. But with that, we're now down, as you see in her recent report, the F&M checking account down to 800,000 from 2 million because we had those three payments coming for the street payments. Uh-huh. So that's down. At the same time, Joe and I had some concerns that regional banks are long term probably not very viable kinds of banks because of what he mentioned today, the playing of that. When I was with Anderson as a partner, we did a strategy that said 15,000 banks were going to go to 5. I think they're down to 7 now. But the push doesn't come with the money center banks. The government protects those, like Australia and Canada does, has 4 or 5. The community banks always have a niche because they fill an individual niche. Regional banks can get caught in either funding squeeze, which was here, or I also get caught in internet fast movement of money. I get my higher rate, I get it over here. So we went and one said, we'd like to talk to FMN Bank, a very conservative bank, but we'd like to understand why the county treasurer pulled her money out of regional banks and put them into money center banks. Think about, what was it, 3 months ago, 4 months ago, when the fear was about that part, and what that meant for FNM, which is a considerable bank. So we met with these people. I'll give you the handout of what we got. It's a very conservative local bank. In fact, the president lives over in Orange Park Acres.
It is a Long Beach bank. Based.
It's a it's officially called Farmers and Merchants Bank Long Beach. So there are many farmers and merchant banks.
We not my personal, but the company deals with everyone.
Right, yeah. And I have a I was the treasurer of San Diego Canyon College, their board trustee, and we moved from school first to FNM Bank on recommendations we made. But we wanted to understand what that meant for us. Would we be closed off from getting our funds at some point?
Because it is a regional bank.
Huh?
It is considered a regional bank. Is that what you're saying? That's why it's not, it's a regional bank.
Let me skip to that point. Because I asked, we had a first vice president out here of Orange, very knowledgeable, we've been with the bank maybe 25, 30 years. And I said, do you guys consider yourself working for a community bank or a regional bank? And I should say the discussion we had with him was very candid. They were very open. He said, well, we're a little over $10 billion in fees now. And if you look on this report they gave us, it's $12 billion. He said, so it's getting a little, we're on the edge of regional banking versus community bank. And then he explained the concepts they had, which they've tied to very much community bank. They don't have, they have a low loan-to-asset ratio, so they're down about 50% lending, whereas the average bank is 75-80%. So they've kept it 50 to 60%. They've kept their money to be relationship clients, not transactional clients. So the fast money that would pull it quickly, there's a relationship there. In this case, referencing what Lynn just said, Joe asked Lee to get, they were paying us 0% for our money, and so Lee made ask for that, and they give us 2%. They can give us 4%, they give us 2%. That's kind of where they are. Everything they have is a very, very conservative. I walked away from there feeling very comfortable that they are a very conservative bank. I walk away also with the idea that as they become a regional bank, there will be pressures on them. As management turns over, and they have a lot of long-term management. The Walkers out here in Orange Park Acres is Dan's president of the place, or CEO, I guess now. So I walked away saying our close one of accessibility of our funds, I feel very comfortable with that. Long-term, I think they are becoming a regional bank. So will that change their operating philosophy? Will they go into more concentrated loans? Will they go into some transactions? At this point, I don't think they're there. A little difficult to get the information from them, quite frankly, because they're a private-public bank. I don't know if I can say that right. They're limited trading and limited exchanges. So they're not really on the marketplace as a public bank. So they promised us an annual report, which we haven't gotten yet, but we need to get that. You can't go on the internet and really find out a lot about their internal structure. So
the Walkers, the founder, still owns more than half of the bank, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
The family.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's a big family now.
It's a family.
Henry, I think, is the grandson of the founder. Mm-hmm. No, great. Yeah, grandson.
Yeah, sorry. It's maybe, so with that, it's a family bank. It has some, there are some public trading of it. It's very limited. And it's hard to get. I think if we went to the SEC and got some of the filings, we could get it from there. But it's not like, even the annual report was kind of tough. They were saying, well, it's a pretty thick report. We mm-hmm. only have so many.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
Just
I feel very comfortable with them.
The company that I'm working for, we also just chose to put our account here.
Yeah. I like them.
Yeah, no, it's positive. I like them all the way. But I just want to take their current mode.
I feel like you do. I feel the same way about the bank and the history of it and the conservatives.
There was one other one that it was. As we went through this crisis, I found out about. If you're a public agency, they collateralize those assets to be backed up. So they match you. In our case, not for the bank, but they'll take a pool, and they keep track of the public agency money, and they keep that amount on reserve.
That's
so they can cover that. So they may have an access problem, but it's not that they don't have the funds, and they have the funds. And their favorite story they love to tell in 1906 when Walker, they had a run on the bank, and they had gold bars in the back. So they were done with that. Whether it was a real story or just but that's their attitude. So I think we, bottom line, wanted to cut off to Ed Show's not here. I'll send him some of this stuff. We're comfortable with that, as well as the fact that we're coming down. We're not keeping those kind of balances. That's all I have. Wanted to break that. So you had the issue of you wanted to get the investment strategy done. You'll work with Lynn on.
Why just that CD money? I think, yeah, and I think because, you know, Joe and Mike advise people on what to do with their money, and Joe especially, maybe he has some suggestions we could bring in next time.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah. These CDs have always irritated me.
Yeah. Well, our next meeting will be in January, but, in the meantime, I just wanted to say that the maturity of this will be October 27, and
we'll just roll it over as is,
and then we'll discuss for future.
Unless you get some great offers coming or something.
I think it would be a good discussions or to explore, because for 2024. We have two CDs gonna be maturing July and August. So those are the last two, the lowest ones. So
We could always get out of that really low one.
Yeah, the only thing is if we do get out, it's gonna be out.
We're in the numbers twice. They didn't quite make sense.
I'm sorry?
The numbers didn't quite make it were very advantageous for us to get out of that.
Mm-hmm.
She said we could always roll out of that. So we could run those numbers again. We will lose money.
Get out of a 0.5% income?
Yes. How the advisor shared with me is because the goal of the CDs is they want us to basically held it to maturity.
Yeah.
So in the event that if we want to pull the money before maturity, the CD will have to recognize a loss on investments. So therefore, fair market value of those CDs is always going to come out lower. As this get closer to maturity, then it will go up.
Yeah. They're making out like a bandit on us.
Aren't they? Mm-hmm. And we're stuck with
it. And we just have to be more aggressive in this market.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's...
Well, that's a good thing.
We've been living with it this long.
And then
it's also good too. And meantime, we also could evaluate our update and review our investment policy as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's something that we
if we think we want to go that way, well, then we'll review the investment. And we're supposed to review it every year anyway.
Yes, we're supposed to review it, correct.
I think it's every other year. Yeah, every other year. Because it got so onerous. Remember, we were every year we're trying to catch up.
Yeah,
we're so we said every other year so that it gave
you. Did you ever find the latest copy,
yeah,
by the way?
Yeah, we did. We have it. It's online.
I don't have it. Oh, it's online.
Yes.
Okay, on the website. Okay.
Yeah. Is there anything in here we shouldn't have? I mean, this is all public information that...
Oh, no, this is all yours.
Yeah. This is for yours to keep, yeah.
Everything we do pretty much in government is public.
Sure. Yeah. You're probably being too old, even behind.
Yeah, we get recorded in here, so it's all. And we post that on our website. So.
Okay, anything else?
It has nothing to do with the advisory committee, but I brought it up the first time I came. And I apologize for the second time when I became a member. But I had to drive all the way to Van Nuys that morning. Which I'd have much rather driven 10 minutes here.
Yeah.
And so, off the record, I'm still concerned about our gardener, you know, working in the street. And we really need to do something because to protect ourselves. Because
didn't he retire?
Well, no, it's not to retire. It's got to be done, but there's no warnings. You know, my business... is involved with public streets and all the warnings and everything. And regardless of the fact that he's a gardener in a little town and it's beautiful, you know, there should be something, a sign said landscaping ahead or something that he puts up, because he's just got these cones. And I come down Taft, you know, and I see
and
him.
That's
and he's
exactly
really
where
working.
I've seen him standing in the middle
and
of the
And he's got the
lane.
Cones like 2 feet from the curb and he's working in there. And I'm concerned that he's going to get hit someday. And you know what that's going to cause. And I know he's not going to like any more than I would. A sign, have to put a sign up ahead of time. But it's just the way it is in this day and age. Mm-hmm. And I'm concerned about it.
I'll talk to him.
I mean, so we really need to...
I'll talk to him.
Yeah, because I mean, you can't believe the... The traffic control that's required nowadays, and I mean it's beyond. I mean, engineered, you know, and cones and how many feet ahead.
I'll talk to him.
Yeah. So anyway, something. If you get a sign says landscaping ahead, you know, two guys, and you put it up 150 feet ahead or whatever the rule book.
It's just him.
I mean, it's not the same.
We have two guys, but they work in different spots.
Yeah, it's not the little old Villa Park, you know.
It's not the way we typically end.
It's.
Can we formally adjourn? And because this is not.
Yeah, wait. That's what I'm going to do. I mean, I want this off the record.
You got it on the record.
Yeah, you got it on the record.
Okay. Well.
Okay. So we'll adjourn.